This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
Hello, and welcome to another World of UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thanks, everybody, for taking the time to join us on today. Welcome, special welcome to those of you who are listening for the first time. We are going to have another interlude. but this is a set of sinister topics that I am going to talk about today. There are still two segments that I'm waiting to cover. I think it's going to take me three episodes to cover those two topics that are coming up. But we sort of got preempted and something else came up. And so think of this as another potpourri segment, but it's sinister potpourri, if you will. So we're just going to have a little bit of a segue and somewhat of another interlude. And for this episode, I just want to share some stories associated with my observations, conversations I've had with people with regard to things that are representative of sinister traits at work today in UX. And it was interesting that I was interacting with somebody recently on LinkedIn, and they were talking about some things that they observed that were going on, that they had questions about, some things that were frustrating them. And I let the person know. I said, that actually is the least of our concerns. And I called out the podcast. I said, you know, I'm in the 60s now. And then there's a lot of sub elements I have talked about. For those of you hearing the show for the first time, I have talked about no fewer than about 150 to 200 different things that have been observed that are being normalized. When I talk about these sinister traits in UX, I'm talking about things that are happening in UX that should not be happening, and people are accepting them as normal, and it's sending us on this crash course where a downward slope that's not good for the discipline. And I know some people, they hear me talk about things and, hey, Darren, why don't you talk about how to fix it? Talking about how to fix it will come. And I actually mark those people as trolls. That's a trollish response. Because the funny thing is, okay, if I told you, if you acknowledge what I'm saying is true, do you need me to come up with the solution? No, you don't. People are bringing up that little kind of a straw man type of a response because they just don't want to hear me talk about it. Here's the trick, and this is why I do it. When we bring something up, when we call something out, what do? When you're about to leave the house, when you're about to go somewhere and you want to be presentable, what do? You look at yourself in the mirror, you brush your teeth, you clean up, you wash up, you shower, whatever it is. You get clean, you get presentable, you get yourself in order, you brush your teeth, you take care of your hair, you put your clothes on, whatever it is that you do, and you get yourself in a position where you find yourself, you deem yourself acceptable. This is what I'm trying to attain. This is how I'm trying to present myself. Okay, check the box. I can leave the house now. I can leave the apartment now. I can leave home now, whatever it is. I can leave the hotel room, whatever it is. We do not embark on anything until we are clear that we are in a presentable and an acceptable, whatever acceptable is, until we reach an acceptable and a presentable state. The reason that we bring up things, the reason we call things out, is because we cannot fix anything until we identify it. When you're about to leave the house, if you see something in your teeth, you're not just going to go, oh, got something in my teeth, and you just leave. You get it out of your teeth. If there's something in your hair, if there's lint in your hair, on your clothes, you go and get the lint roller. If there's pet hair, you get rid of that stuff, and then you go. You don't see something and do nothing. So when we talk about these things, when we bring up sinister traits, when we bring up the things I'm going to share with you tonight, we're bringing them up because we see them. Some people see them and they thank me for sharing these things because they see it and they're trying to reconcile it, and they know that some type of action needs to take place, and they're a little confused and they're wondering because a lot of people are saying nothing because they're normalizing it or because they're afraid. Then that's just a bad situation. When we see something, it is a call to action. Anytime we call something out, it is a call to action. Now, going back to the point I made a minute ago with one of the trollish complainers and there's been a few of those people. I just laugh at those people because I know they're ridiculous, quite frankly. But when you see something, you call it out because you want to resolve it. Again, I have a fix for everything I'm talking about. The thing is, I'm not going to do it by myself. Let me back up. I'm not going to fix it by myself. I can't fix it by myself. And so when I bring something up, it's a call to action. It's a call to mobilization. It's a call to see, okay, who else sees this? Who else recognizes it? Who else is going to help make this thing right? So when people try to say, well, Darren, you bring this stuff up, but you're not going to go out there and fix it. Well, neither are you. So that's a pretty ridiculous point to make. And again, those are just trolls. Trolls just live to just start mess. They just leave to be contrary. These are the people who want the anarchical type of environment, which is not good for anybody. We need standards. We need something to hold ourselves accountable to. And that's another reason that I do it. I'm trying to remind people of what we should be doing. I'm trying to remind people of how we should be framing ourselves and presenting ourselves. And we're not going to rise up at all and do the right thing as a discipline until we do. So, understand it? Got it? Okay, let's get into today's list. And let me just share some stories about sinister activity. And some of these may get a little comical, but I laugh about it now because they're over. And sometimes I just laugh because it's just so ridiculous that you can't. You just have to laugh at it because it makes no sense whatsoever. The first thing I want to mention, there's nothing sinister about this. I'm actually going to start out with something I thought was great. I was doing some work, doing some research for some work that I'm doing. And I came across just reading all these papers on UX that have been produced around the world. Just having a field day in the ACM Digital Library recently. And I came across a quote that I thought was just phenomenal. And I shared it on social media because I thought it was a great grounding statement that helps people to escape the mindset of oversimplification of user experience. And the statement went like this. HCI, which is short for human-computer interaction, and in some cases people feel that is the same as saying UX, that it's, they think of it as UXy. It's a UXy thing. We get it. When you're doing UX work, you are doing HCI work. And we'll just leave it at that for the purpose of this discussion. But they said that HCI is a complex field that requires designers to develop abstract forms of knowledge that include an understanding of psychological principles, core methodological strategies and heuristics, and the ability to carry out sophisticated thinking processes. What a wonderful statement. That is what we do as UX professionals. So when people try to say, I saw once somebody said, I can teach you everything you need to know about UX in a weekend. And that person had only been doing UX for the equivalent of figuratively 3 minutes. And they didn't know anything. They were touting the UX UI combo acronym, which is a sign of ignorance every time you see it. Hey, if you're doing it, hey, it is what it is. I had it in my job title once before too. And when I first heard it, I just didn't think anything of it. And I came to learn differently. So some people may think nothing of it today. It doesn't mean you're going to feel the same way in 5 years. I'm just telling you now. And then you're going to regret not moving faster when you do find out. It's a harmful combo acronym that does us a gross disservice by its use. But I love this quote because I think it really crystallizes, paints a wonderful picture of what we do as user experience professionals, no matter what part of the discipline you're operating in. It is, again, a complex field that requires designers to develop abstract forms of knowledge that include an understanding of psychological principles, core methodological strategies and heuristics, and the ability to carry out sophisticated thinking processes. That's what we do, folks. We are scientists. If you're doing pure UX, if you're just all about Figma and you're just all about making things pretty and you're going to say, which design do you like better? If you're one of those people, that's the cult of UX. That's UX theater. It has no value. And if you keep going down that road, eventually you're going to find out the hard way. So it's good to wake up and come out of that and do the right thing. So that's it. Just wanted to share that. So I guess we did sort of tie that into some of the sinister stuff, but that's fine too. So let's get into some of the more sinister stuff. I told some of these stories before, but they just bear repeating right now. I told a story once about how I did a talk on emotional intelligence. I'm doing a master class on the same subject for Interaction Design Foundation next week. So I've delivered talks about emotional intelligence, EQ, and how it relates to doing UX work multiple times. And I was delivering the talk this particular time for some coworkers. And as I was delivering this talk on EQ, at the end of the talk, I provided some book recommendations. I said, well, if anybody wants to learn more about EQ, here's some books I highly recommend. This is a great start. You'll be reading these books for the rest of your career. It's just some great stuff. Now, mind you, there was already a riot. That's the first part of this story. There was a part during the talk. I'll come back to the book recommendations in a moment. But there was a portion in the talk where I invited people to go to a website at Mind Tools. You can go to the Mind Tools website if you're interested, and you can take this little 15 question, I think it is, test just to give you an idea. It's not very granular. It's not very micro-oriented in its evaluation of your emotional intelligence, but it'll give you an idea, especially if you're just diving into the subject. And so I had people go out there and do it, and I did it too while we were in that part of the presentation. And interestingly, after people saw their score, I wasn't going to tell them what my score was, but someone asked me what my score was. And when they found out how high my score was, there was a riot, the equivalent of a riot. These people went berserk. They were angry, and then they began to say, well, you know, you can fake your way through those. You can lie and all these other things. Their scores were pathetic, and they didn't like the fact that my score was really, really high. Matter of fact, it was like 3 points off of acing the thing. And so I make it a point to be sharp when it comes to emotional intelligence. I don't tolerate things from myself because I want to be the absolute best I can be. And I hope the same thing applies to those of you that are under the sound of my voice right now. But it was just interesting how people just went into riot mode and just wanted to, if it would have been that goofy movie, The Purge, where it's legal to kill people. If we had been in a purge-oriented environment at that moment, I would not be here delivering this this podcast episode because they wanted me dead. And then they continued to behave like that after the fact. But this is a really terrible, sinister trait that EQ, there's a lot of deficits in EQ. And in order to thrive in UX, if you really want to thrive, you need to be as emotionally intelligent as possible. You want to always be in the business of becoming more and more emotionally intelligent. It's going to help you manage your stakeholders. It's going to help you to represent the discipline in a proper way. It's going to help you to have thicker skin. It's just going to help you be the best you. I can't say enough about the importance of EQ. But again, there was a little mini riot. We get to the end of the presentation. Now back to the book recommendations. We get back to the end of the presentation and I talk about the books and I show a list of books and it's unbelievable that somebody actually did this, but it shows that really that heinous, well, it showed a lack of emotional intelligence. The things I talk about when I talk about EQ red flags, they were coming forth like I'm just it was off the charts. The levels of the deficits in EQ were off the charts in that moment. Somebody literally said, "Are you getting a kickback? Are you getting paid from Amazon to recommend these books to us?" And so then they dismissed the fact that I recommended the books and went on their way. And all they did was really confirm that they didn't have the emotional intelligence that they needed to have. And it's really sad that this is what I have been seeing more and more and more. And I keep hearing a bunch of stories that are of the same ilk, just over and over and over and over again, where people just don't, they're very inhumane. People are very incivil. I'm talking about in UX circles. I don't care what's happening in other disciplines. A lot of times people say, well, you know, this applies over there too. Not thinking about them, not talking about them. I'm concerned about UX. This is my domain. This is my purview. If you're a UX professional, this is your domain. This is your purview. I don't care what's happening over there with the developers. I don't care what's happening over there with the other group, whatever discipline, fill in the blank, whatever it is. I'm trying to help UX thrive. That's why I do this podcast. That's why I educate. That's why I take time mentoring people. That's why I take time answering people's questions when they send me questions all the time, because I'm trying to help the discipline. I don't care about the other stuff. Not my purview, not my jurisdiction. I have nothing to do with what's going on with other disciplines, but I am responsible for helping this one be the best that it can possibly be. These things should not happen. Here's somebody making a presentation, giving a presentation on emotional intelligence, trying to help the team. And I basically got the equivalent of lynched in the process. So it's funny. I won't even get it. I was going to say something. I'm not going to say anything else about that. That's enough about that. It's really sad, folks. It's really, really sad when you see these types of traits. And for those of you who are enduring these things, do just that. Endure. Be the bigger person. You don't have to become them. You don't have to be them. You don't have to respond tit for tat. But it is important to ground ourselves and to make sure that we are emotionally intelligent when we come face to face with that type of treatment, and do the right thing at all times. So, you know, pretty sad. Here's an under-the-radar sinister trait. On to the next one. Have you ever, especially for those of you, because LinkedIn is probably the place where people tend to interact the most. I was interacting with someone recently. I saw a post, actually, and someone was talking about all the interactions they had on Reddit and how much Reddit has done for them. And I'm happy for them for that, because personally, I hate Reddit. I think it's the land of trolls. There's way too much trolling on Reddit. The cool thing is that if there is some trolling, if and when there is trolling on Reddit, if you report it, they'll do something about it, whereas LinkedIn will do nothing about it. So I will give Reddit that. I will give them their props for that. But have you ever been, whether it's LinkedIn, Facebook, wherever it is, wherever you engage with people, have you ever had somebody write you totally out of the blue? Somebody, you don't know them. You've never seen them face-to-face. You've never had conversations with them. You've never seen them face-to-face on a Zoom call. Nothing. You don't know who this person is, but they have the audacity. That's another problem. Audaciousness. That's sinister. It's really crazy when somebody will write you and they don't know you and they ask you to serve as a recommendation for them for a job. Can I put your name down as a recommendation for this job I'm applying for? Absolutely not. Do you know me? Why do you even want me to be a recommendation for you if I don't know you? You have no idea what I'm going to say. Oh, you just think I'm going to lie? Because not you're telling me that you're a liar when you ask me that. And personally, I like people with high character. I like being around people with high character. So when I see something like that, that's just terrible. It's not just me. It's happening everywhere. Everywhere. People are willing to ask you for the most ridiculous things and they have no shame whatsoever. They want to get that job or whatever it is that they're after. Please don't, under the sound of my voice, please don't ask me to be a recommendation for you and I don't know you. Because number one, I'm going to delete you. I'm going to remove our connection and I'm going to block you because that's an insult. So, but it's very sinister. That's what we're talking about. So that's what I'm trying to illustrate and put on your radar So again, you can do the right thing as we make you more sensitive to this by talking about it. That's the other thing that we're doing. Another sinister trait, and this is something that happens. Some of you have seen, I started a line of t-shirts and accessories because I'm always saying certain things. There's certain things I just talk about an awful lot. And I have said things and people have said, if you put that on a t-shirt, I'll buy it. You should put that on a t-shirt. So I finally did it. And I started a little operation. I'm always saying that UX is not UI. It's the graphic in the header on my LinkedIn profile. I've been saying it for years. I've been fighting the good fight about it for years. I've been educating people about it for years. I post about it all the time. And so the first t-shirt that I did said UX is not UI. I've got a whole slew of them. If you want to see them, go to kaizentees.com, KAIZENTEES.com if you want to see them. Take a look. And there's all kind of stuff that's out there. Little plug for, shameless plug for what's going on with Kaizen Tees. But it's a labor of love, and you know we'll make a little bit of money doing it. We actually will, because there's a little bit of money associated with it, and there's money you got to pay out to do it too. But the thing is, somebody saw it, and apparently they thought it was cool. Now, I just recently talked on the podcast about how poor we are, and I said it when I spoke at Convey UX a couple weeks ago. I talked about how poorly we support one another. If you do something great, you being whoever, if you do something that's wonderful, somebody's going to see it. And instead of supporting you, it's something original. It's something you put a lot of effort into. Again, I talk about it all the time. I don't know anybody as vocal as I am about the UX is not UI bit. I don't know anybody who has sacrificed what I've sacrificed to spread that message, to keep saying it. And then for someone, and I announce the t-shirts, I share some of the t-shirts and the merchandise, coffee cups, whatever. I share them on LinkedIn, I share them on Twitter, I share them wherever. And somebody saw it, and true to form, same thing I talked about on the podcast, the issue of not supporting folks. Instead of supporting, somebody went, created a similar t-shirt, put it up in their little store, and then posted it as a reply to my post, which makes it a competing element. That's tacky. And here's the other thing, too. That's a sinister trait. Some people, not only are they inhumane, some people are just downright tacky, and they don't have any sensitivity about being tacky whatsoever. They can be tacky and they don't care. They're like the people. You ever seen the people? This is another sinister trait. You ever seen people? They're always talking about what they're doing on social media, but you never see them liking or supporting anybody else. That's the same thing. We don't support one another. If you did something that is great, will it kill you to like what somebody did? Will it kill you to say congratulations? Will it kill you to pat somebody on the back? We don't support one another. And the sad thing is, people support the most ridiculous things, but they don't support the stuff that should be supported. So it's just really ridiculous. Well, I ended up saying something to the person. I said, you know, that's cool. You know, you're going to sell that shirt. I don't know when you did it. I don't know the story behind it. But do you have to post it as a reply, the link to yours? Do you have to post that as a reply to mine? This is a corporation. This is something I've labored hours and hours and hours and hours to get off the ground. This is something I have spent money to fund, to get it going. This wasn't a whim. I wasn't sitting somewhere, saw what somebody else did, copied off of them, and went and did it. And so on top of the fact that you're not supporting when anybody does something like that, they're not supporting, but they're also derailing it by drawing attention toward what they're doing. That's shameless. I said shameless plug, but I said for when I talked about the URL, I'm kidding when I say that. It's a plug. I'm not ashamed of it. I don't have to be ashamed of it. And it's a nice, somebody said it's a nice educational vehicle. It's fun to just throw the shirt on and go to a meeting that UX is not UI and watch the faces, watch the conversations get started and how you can help to drive better UX maturity, because people are starting to jettison the misinformation that they've been spouting and wallowing around in for years. That's why I did it. The benefit I get out of it, that's not, can't make a living off of that. But it's pretty interesting. People just don't support. And so I addressed it, and the person, oh, I didn't know it was your thing. What do you mean you didn't know it was my thing? Are you seeing my pose? Apparently don't listen to the podcast. Don't pay attention to the post. Don't pay attention to anything. And so I pay attention to everybody I'm connected with. I make it a point. I'm going to support you. Unless you're doing something totally ridiculous, I'm going to support you. And I make it a point to support what other people are doing. It's not all about me. As a matter of fact, it's not about me at all. So I make it a point to support what other people do. And again, as long as it's solid. If somebody is doing something and it doesn't deserve to be supported, I'm not going to support it. And it's sinister, and I'm not going to be two-faced about it. And I'm not going to be dissimulatory. No, that's not honorable. So I'm simply not doing that. But that, folks, the lack of support, it's sad. It's sad. So I hope things get better with that. And I hope bringing it up will help some people be more sensitive to it, because some people, they're on a tangent. Matter of fact, they just want everybody to support them and don't support anybody else. I know situations where that's happening, and it's really sad. It's not helping us. We need to support one another. And then I'm just going to cover one more topic today, and we're going to call it a day here with this episode. I'm revisiting a topic that we covered earlier in the series about the sinister traits. And this has to do with portfolios. There have been so many conversations that have taken place lately that I've been a part of where we're talking about portfolios, or people want their portfolio reviewed, and everybody's acting like the portfolio is, that's the thing. If you want to get a job, you got to have a portfolio. Everything I do revolves around the portfolio. Everything you do doesn't revolve around your portfolio. Everything you do revolves around whether or not you're qualified. And there's a lot of people with portfolios and they're not. And there's a lot of people that are reviewing portfolios have absolutely no idea what they're doing. And so let me just give you a few factoids associated with portfolios, and then we'll call it an episode there. Now, I said some time ago, and I'm saying it again, portfolios sort of got shoehorned into UX because they don't really apply. Not really. To the point that there are some companies, they don't even look at portfolios. I've worked at three of the largest digital design companies in the world and never had to produce a portfolio to get those jobs, ever. And the people who are asking for portfolios, they're asking because they don't know how to evaluate you. So I had a social media post just today, the same day I'm recording this, where I said that a portfolio does not substitute for an adult conversation. It's, you should be able to talk, and everybody should be honest, and we should find out what the story is with regard to whether or not a person is qualified. But this little song and dance number that people are doing, portfolios, are just ridiculous. You know where portfolios really belong? Because they don't really belong in UX. They really don't. And I'll explain why as I go through this list. Photographers should have portfolios. You know why? Because you're just looking at a visual representation. And when you see that picture, you see a reflection of the skill, their composition. I'm a photographer. If I look at somebody's pictures, and I see a lot of pictures, and I'm able to critique them on the spot, I know how well you composed it. I know if I was trying to hire you for something I was doing for photography, I would look at your passion first and foremost, depending upon what it is you're going to be doing. I'm going to look at your passion. I'm going to look at the way you execute your craft. I'm going to look and see your interest level associated with the craft. I do the same thing for UX people. When I'm a hiring manager, I do the same exact thing. I don't care about your portfolio. But back to photography. If I'm looking at photography, composition tells me about your eye. So that means something. So looking at the portfolio, that matters. When I see what you put in your portfolio, it is very representative of what you think about how to best present yourself. That's another thing that doesn't happen with UX because a lot of us are stricken by NDAs. We can't share certain things. A lot of us are so committed to getting the work done, you'll never see our best work because we were so busy moving on to the next project that you don't have time to go back and gather artifacts to put in the portfolio, or you just couldn't do it, so you didn't do it anyway because you can't do it. So you'll never see that. You'll usually see in a lot of people's portfolios, you'll see probably the bare minimum of what they were able to gather. So you're not going to see, as some people like to say, the best work. You're not going to see that. It simply isn't going to happen. And so when people review a portfolio thinking this is the person's best work, it shows you how bankrupt they are with regard to an understanding of how to really evaluate talent. So there, I said it. So photographers need portfolios. It represents their skill level. It's a proper representation of their skill level. They have access to every picture they took. They put the stuff in there because they realize that it's a great thing. So they did that. If somebody is into stocks, there's a portfolio associated with stocks. And you can tell if that person is good at what they do by how profitable they are with regard to what is in their portfolio. Oh, there's number two. Number three, there are people who have landscaping businesses and they will do have before and after pictures taken. They will show what is a direct reflection of their handiwork to let you know, do you really want this person manicuring your yard or not? And so it's all represented by what you see visually. Catch that, please. By what you see visually. That's not happening when it comes to real UX work. And a lot of these people reviewing portfolios do not know that. Next, a florist. If a person is a florist and they have pictures of arrangements that they've put together, and it's this wonderful construction that is representative of their skill set. And again, it's all visual. And then there's other things that may happen in a conversation that sort of remind me about UX because they can talk about how they cultivated those different plants, how they took care of it, and how they did certain things. That's going to come up in a conversation. So that reminds me of UX because it's not until you have a conversation with somebody that you're going to find out who they really are. And then number five, the last one, visual designers. Interestingly, and that's how portfolios started being considered when it came to UX jobs, because people started to equate UX work with visual design. That's how the UI UX and UX UI combo acronym was born, because people started to see what UX folks were doing the same way that they saw visual design, because they didn't know what to think of UX, so they just equated it to visual design, and that's where that combo acronym came from. So I saw a post recently where somebody said it came from the boot camps. No, it did not. It came from people who did not know. It came from some of us who didn't know how to represent the discipline, and it came from other people who didn't know what to think of us, so they just said what they thought, and nobody ever held them accountable for it, and it just took off. That's what happened, but we are not UI designers. Matter of fact, a lot of us are terrible when it comes to that, and it wasn't until the rise of the product designer that you had more quote-unquote UX professionals that were good at visual design. That's because a lot of them, that's all they are, is visual designers, but they're not doing that stuff that we talked about earlier. Shall I remind you? HCI is a complex field that requires designers to develop abstract forms of knowledge that include an understanding of psychological principles, core methodological strategies and heuristics, and the ability to carry out sophisticated thinking processes. This has nothing to do with visual design. This is who we are, and this is what we do. And so people, if you can't do that, you're not a UX person yet. Doesn't matter what your title is. Doesn't matter that you're getting a check. If you're not doing what I just mentioned in that quote, you're not doing UX work yet. You can ascribe to be that, but you're not that now. And somebody needs to tell you, so I guess that's sort of my job. Portfolios are, they're used to discriminate against more seasoned professionals. The more seasoned someone is, the more acumen someone has in user experience, the less relevant a portfolio is. Again, unless you sit and walk through it and talk about it. Because if you sit and have a conversation, that can be wonderful. That can be wonderful, but sending somebody a link to a portfolio and not walking them through it, that's deadly stuff right there. Because we assume that the person reviewing it knows, and they usually do not. The mere fact they're asking you and are going to go through the portfolio without you walking through it is a sign they don't know anything, and that's grossly unethical as well. As soon as someone asks for a portfolio, four more seasoned people, I've started calling that the kiss of death. You're done. You're not going to be considered for that job as soon as they see your portfolio, because somebody else is going to put something beautiful out there, and that's the one that's going to get the attention, even though UX is not about pretty at all. At all. It is the least, the thing that we are involved in and contribute to the least is the visual aspect of our designs. Someone actually, a high profile person, said recently that if you improve the interface, you automatically improve the UX. It doesn't take much of an effort to look at things like that to see that that statement is not true. It more people need to be involved and more committed to critical thinking, because people are making some of the most ridiculous statements and getting away with it because the partakers don't have critical thinking, and they don't care because a lot of these people are getting rich off of the people who believe this stuff. But that was a ridiculous statement. That was one of the most, it would be laughable if it wasn't so heinous and ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. Applicants will be judged based more on beginner-oriented criteria when the portfolio comes out. Why do I say that? Once the portfolio comes into play, the people who are reviewing it, their biases kick in. And their biases are pretty much always going to tie into aesthetics. And so now the UX content in a seasoned person's portfolio is going to be completely disregarded. Even though that's the stuff that drives the profit. That's the stuff that is the competitive differentiator. The UX stuff, not the aesthetic stuff. Anybody can do something aesthetic. Anybody can put lipstick on a pig too. You put a lipstick on a pig, the pig does look better. But it's lipstick on a pig, so does it have any value? Absolutely not. So the lipstick on the pig people are winning right now because there are too many people who saw the lipstick on the pig. I guess they got a chuckle out of it, and so they opted for the lipstick on a pig. Doesn't work. That's not how things work. So, but again, when that portfolio is reviewed, if the person is more seasoned, then people are going to judge the skilled person, the more seasoned person, the more senior person from a new UXer's perspective. And there's no way in the world that you can succeed when that happens. So I'm going to start getting louder and louder about this very soon. You'll see what I'm talking about when it happens. And then lastly, a UX portfolio, it can indeed give you an idea of how somebody thinks. It can. It's possible. But it's 50-50. There's a 50-50 chance that if you're more seasoned, that things are going to work out in your favor at best. Because, you know why? For every item, every example, every case study that's in a person's portfolio, there's a use case associated with it. And if the use case that's being reflected in your storytelling is not relevant to the people who are reviewing it for that job you're applying for, it's immediately going to get cast aside. So again, it's the kiss of death, not only from a purpose of aesthetics, but it can be the kiss of death because it is simply an irrelevant presentation. And you have no idea what may or may not be relevant in almost any given time. So portfolios are dangerous. And there are more people that are refusing to provide portfolios. There are people there are companies that are no longer asking people to provide a portfolio, the ones who know what they're doing. I have never asked for a portfolio. I have asked for a portfolio. Let me back up. I asked for a portfolio on one job where I was the hiring manager, where I was contributing at least to hiring someone. And when this, where was my choice, I'm speaking of. And when I did that, I didn't pay attention to the portfolios. I was paying attention to the storytelling. I was paying attention to what the person was talking about. We just used the portfolio as a jumping off point. And then I think about another instance where I was a hiring manager and I didn't ask for a portfolio at all. We gave the person an exercise, not a whiteboard exercise. We gave the person an exercise and let them know, hey, we know this is off the cuff. We know that this is something that you're going to be thinking about it right here and now. So it doesn't have to be perfect. Just trying to understand how you think. And you try to set the person at ease as best you can so you can be fair. Because when somebody is going through the interviewing process, they're already being stressed out. And I always thought it's really critical to make them as comfortable as possible and be as transparent as possible with them and set the stage for them to be able to excel. So I did that. But a portfolio? Nah, I don't want to see that. I'm not looking for a song and dance. Don't want you to do a song and dance. You're not about to serve the same thing up to me you served up to the last 50 people you interviewed with. Portfolios are bad. Period. Portfolios are bad. So that's it for this segment. Another segue, if you will. Another interlude for the sinister traits. So we hope you got something out of this, folks. And we'll see if we can get to those last 2 points and start to hammer them out. And then we're going to bring this topic to a close. So that's all the time we have for today. It is time to sign off. So this is Darren Hood, everybody, the host of The World of UX, wishing everybody all the best. Until next time, happy UXing, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show and visit cxofm.org for more resources.